Chapter 2. A Voice in the Darkness. It was a bright, sunny day, thought Granny Weatherwax. A perfect day, in fact. She had been up all night and cleaned the hall and kitchen in her cottage until everything that could shine was shining, the stove polished, the rag rug shaken, and the flagstones scrubbed. She moved up her corkscrew staircase and concentrated next on the floor in the bedroom. She had made some very good soap this year. Granny's soap was like her advice, strong and sharp, and it stung a bit at the time, but it worked. And the jug and little washbasin by the bed were gleaming. The spiders in the corners, who had thought they had tenure unto doomsday, were carefully shown the window, webs and all. Even the mattress looked clean and wholesome. Every so often, Yu, her cat, appeared to see what was going on, and to lie on the patchwork quilt that was so flat it looked like someone had trodden on a huge tortoise. Then Granny cleaned the privy once again, just for good measure. Not an errand for a fine day, but Esmeralda Weatherwax was meticulous in these things, and the privy yielded to her efforts, and yes, it shone. Amazingly so. Watching her, the intensity that showed on her cat's face was remarkable. This was a different day, you sensed. A day not yet experienced. A day that bustled as if there would never be another day. And with the inside of the cottage up to scratch, you now followed Granny into the scullery. A bucket of water, filled from the pump by the well, did the trick there. Granny smiled. She had always liked the scullery. It smelled of hard work being done properly. Here there were also spiders, mostly hiding around the bottles and jars on the shelves, but she thought scullery spiders didn't really count. Live and let live. She went outside next, to the walled paddock at the back of the cottage, to check on her goats. The itinerary of her thinking was declaring that once again all things were in their rightful place. Satisfied, or as satisfied as a witch could ever be, Granny Weatherwax went to her beehives. "You are my bees," she said to them. "Thank you. You've given me all my honey for years, and please don't be upset when someone new comes. I hope that you will give her as much honey as you have given me. And now, for the last time, I will dance with you." But the bees hummed softly and danced for her instead, gently pushing her mind out of their hive. And Granny Weatherwax said, "I was younger when I last danced with you, but I am old now. There will be no more dances for me." You kept away from the bees, but stalked through the garden, following Granny as she moved through the herbs, touching a frond or a leaf as she passed, and the whole garden seemed to answer her, the plants almost nodding their heads in respect. Yu narrowed her eyes and looked sideways at the plants with what might be called feline disfavour. An onlooker might swear Granny's herbs were sapient, as they often moved without the wind blowing. On at least one occasion, to the cat's horror, they had actually turned round to watch her as she sneaked past on a hunting expedition. She preferred plants that did what they were told, which was mostly to stay dead still so that she could go back to sleep. At the far end of the herbs, Granny came to the apple tree old Mr. Parsons had given her only last year, planting it roughly where anyone else would have a fence around their garden, for no witch's cottage ever needed an actual fence or wall. Who would cross a witch? The wicked old witch in the woods? Sometimes stories can be useful for a witch without, it must be said, any fence-building skills. Granny eyed the tiny apples appearing on the bough. They had only just begun to grow, and, well, time was waiting. And so she walked again back to her cottage door, acknowledging every root, stem, and fruit she passed. She fed the goats, who looked at her askance with their slotted eyes. Their gaze followed her as she turned to the chickens, who always squabbled over their feed. Today, however, they didn't squabble, but looked at the old witch as if she wasn't there. With the animals fed, Granny Weatherwax went into the scullery and came back with a switch of willows. She got to work, teasing every piece of resilient willow into the right place. Then, when the thing she had made was clearly excellent and fit for purpose, Granny Weatherwax left it near the foot of the stairs where it would be noticed for those with eyes to see. She tidied the remnants of her work back to the scullery and came out again with a small bag, a white one, and a red ribbon coiled in her other hand. She looked to the sky. Time was wasting. She walked briskly into the woods, you trailing behind, curious as only a cat can be, until at least the first 8 of its lives had been used up. Then, her task completed, Granny Weatherwax retraced her steps towards the little stream which ran through the woods close by. It gurgled and tinkled. She knew the woodlands, every log, every bough, every creature that lived in there, more intimately than anyone not a witch could ever know. When her nose told her there was no one around apart from you, she opened a bag, took out a bar of her soap, and undressed. She stepped into the stream, getting as clean as could be. And now, drying herself off and wrapping just her cloak around her washed body, she went back to the cottage, where she gave you an extra meal, stroked her head, and climbed the squeaking staircase to her bedroom, humming an old dirge as she went. Then Esmeralda Weatherwax brushed out her long grey hair and re-pinned it into its usual bun with an army of pins, and dressed again, this time choosing her best witch's dress and least mended pair of drawers. She paused to open the little wooden window to the soft evening air and carefully placed 2 pennies on the small bedside table, beside her pointy witch's hat, festooned with unused hatpins. The last thing she did before she lay down was to pick up a familiar card she had written on earlier. And a little later, when the cat jumped up onto the bed, it appeared to you that something strange was happening. She heard an owl hoot, and a fox barked in the darkness. And there was just the cat, you, all alone. But if cats could smile, this one did. It was a strange night. The owls hooted almost non-stop, and the wind outside for some reason made the wicks of the candles inside wobble with a vengeance and then blow out. But Granny Weatherwax was dressed in her best and ready for anything. And now, in the deep, warm darkness, as dawn began to stealthily steal the night, her soul had a visitor, an individual with a scythe with a blade so shadow-thin that it could separate a soul from a body. Then the darkness spoke.
"Esmeralda Weatherwax, you know who comes, and may I say it's a privilege to deal with you."
"I know it is you, Mr. Death. After all, we witches always knows what's coming," said Granny, looking down at her body on the bed. Her visitor was no stranger, and the land she knew she was going to was a land she had helped many others to step through to over the years. For the witch stands on the very edge of everything, between the light and the dark, between life and death, making choices, making decisions so that others may pretend no decisions have even been needed. Sometimes they need to help some poor soul through the final hours, help them to find the door, not to get lost in the dark. And Granny Weatherwax had been a witch for a long, long time.
"Esmeralda Weatherwax, we have met so many times before now, haven't we?"
"Too many to count, Mr. Reaper. Well, you've finally got me, you old bugger. I've had my season, no doubt about it, and I was never one for pushing myself forward or complaining."
"I have watched your progress with interest, Esmeralda Weatherwax," said the voice in the dark.
He was firm, but oh so polite. But now there was a question in his voice.
"Pray tell me, why were you content to live in this tiny little country when, as you know, you could have been anything and anybody in the world?"
"I don't know about the world, not much. But in my part of the world, I could make little miracles for ordinary people," Granny replied sharply. "And I never wanted the world. Just a part of it. A small part which I could keep safe. Which I could keep away from storms. Not the ones of the sky, you understand. There are other kinds."
"And would you say your life benefited the people of Lanka and environs?"
After a minute, the soul of Granny Weatherwax said, "Well, not boasting your willingness, I think I have done right, for Lanka at least. I've never been to environs."
"Mistress Weatherwax, the word environs means, well, thereabouts."
"All right," said Granny. "I did get about, to be sure."
"A very good life lived indeed, Esmeralda."
"Thank you," said Granny. "I did my best."
"More than your best," said Death. "And I look forward to watching your chosen successor. We have met before."
"She's a good witch, to be sure," said the shade of Granny Weatherwax. "I have no doubts whatsoever."
You are taking this very well, Esme Weatherwax.
It's an inconvenience, true enough, and I don't like it at all. But I know that you do it for everyone, Mr. Death. Is there any other way?
No, there isn't, I'm afraid. We are all floating in the winds of time, but your candle, Mistress Weatherwax, will flicker for some time before it goes out. A little reward for a life well lived, for I can see the balance, and you have left the world much better than you found it. And if you ask me,
said Death,
nobody could do any better than that.
There was no light, no point of reference, except for the two tiny blue pinpricks sparkling in the eye sockets of Death himself. Well, the journey was worth taking, and I saw many wonderful things on the way, including you, my reliable friend. Shall we go now?
Madam, we've already gone.
In the early morning light, in a village pond near Slice, Bubbles came to the surface, followed by Miss Tick, Witchfinder. There was no one there to observe this remarkable occurrence, apart from her mule, Joseph, grazing steadily on the riverbank. Of course, she told herself sadly as she picked up her towel, they all leave me alone these days. She sighed. It was such a shame when old customs disappeared. A good witch-ducking was something she had liked doing in the bad old days. She had even trained for it. All those swimming lessons, and practice with knots at the Quirm College for Young Ladies. She had been able to defeat the mobs underwater, if necessary, or at least work at breaking her own record for untying the simple knots they all thought worked on the nasty witch. Now, a bit of pond-dipping had become more like a hobby, and she had a nasty feeling that others were copying her after she passed through their villages. She'd even heard talk of a swimming club being started in one small hamlet over by Hamon Rye. A popular idea among the lads, since they felt that everyone, and everyone definitely included the young ladies, should swim without their clothes. Miss Tick picked up her towel to dry herself off and went back to her small caravan, gave Joseph his breakfast nosebag and put the kettle on. She settled down under the trees to have her snap, bread and dripping, a thank you the day before from a farmer's wife for an afternoon's knowledge of reading. Miss Tick had smiled as she left because the eyes of the rather elderly woman had been sparkling. Now, she had said, I can see what's in those letters Alfred gets, especially the ones that smell of lavender. Miss Tick wondered if it might be a good idea to get moving soon, before Alfred got another letter, anyway. Her stomach filled, ready for the day ahead, she sensed an uneasiness in the air, so there was nothing for it but to make a shamble. A shamble is a witch's aid to inner concentration, and always has to be made right there and then, when needed, to catch the moment. It could be made of pretty much anything, but had to include something alive. An egg would do, though most witches would prefer to save the egg for dinner, in case it exploded on them. Miss Tick dug in her pockets. A woodlouse, a dirty handkerchief, an old sock, an ancient conker, a stone with a hole in it, and a toadstool which Miss Tick couldn't quite identify and so couldn't risk eating. She expertly strung them all together with a bit of string and a spare length of knicker elastic. Then she pulled at the threads. But there was something wrong. With a twang that reverberated round the clearing, the tangle of objects threw itself into the air and spun, twisting and turning. Well, that's going to complicate things, Miss Tick groaned. Just across the woods from Granny Weatherwax's cottage, Nanny Ogg nearly dropped a flagon of her best homemade cider on her cat, Grebo. She kept her flagons of cider in the shady spring by her cottage. The tomcat considered a growl, but after one look at his mistress, he tried to be a good boy, for the normally cheerful face of Nanny Ogg was like thunder this morning. And he heard her mutter, "It should have been me." In Genua, on a royal visit with her husband Verence, Queen Magrat of Lanka, former witch, discovered that even though she might think she had retired from magic, magic had not retired from her. She shuddered as the shock wave was carried across the world like a tsunami, an intimation that things were going to be otherwise. In Boffo's Novelty and Joke Emporium in Ankh Morpork, all the whoopee cushions trumpeted in a doleful harmony, while over in Quirm, Agnes Knitt, both witch and singer, woke with the sinking feeling known to many that she might have made a fool of herself at the previous evening's first night party, though Agnes does have the very handy excuse that if she behaves badly, it might not be Agnes doing the devil amongst the pixies dance on the table, but her other personality, P. Perdita, who is much more outgoing and, incidentally, a lot thinner. It certainly still seemed to be going on behind her eyeballs. Then suddenly she heard her inner Perdita wail. Over in the great city of Ankh Morpork at Unseen University, Ponder Stibbons had just finished a lengthy breakfast when he entered the basement of the high-energy magic building. He stopped and gaped in amazement. In front of him, Hex was calculating at a speed that Ponder had never seen before, and he hadn't even entered a question yet, or pulled the great big lever. The ant tubes that the ants crawled through to make their calculations were blurred with their motion. Was that an ant crash by the cogwheel? Ponder tapped a question into Hex. What do you know that I don't? Please, Hex. There was a scuffling in the anthills, and the answer spat out, practically everything. Ponder rephrased his question more carefully with the requisite number of if and before clauses. It was wordy and complicated, a huge ask for a wizard with only one meal in him, and no one else would have understood what Ponder even meant, but after a big hiccup of ants, Hex shot out, "We are dealing with the death of Granny Weatherwax." And then Ponder went to see the Arch-Chancellor, Mustrum Ridcully, who would definitely want to hear this news. In the oblong office of the Patrician of Ankh Morpork, Lord Veterinary watched amazed as his Times crossword filled itself in. High above the ramtops, in the monastery of Oi Dong, the abbot of the history monks licked his mystic pencil and made a note of it. The cat called Yu purred like a kind of feline windmill. And in the travelling now, Escarina, a woman who had once been a wizard, held the hand of her son and knew sorrow. But in a world shimmering just the other side of the disk, a world where dreams could become real, where those who lived there liked to creep through to other worlds and hurt and destroy and steal and poison, an elf lord by the name of Peaseblossom felt a powerful quiver shoot through the air as a spider might feel a prey land on his web. He rubbed his hands in glee. "A barrier has gone," he whispered to himself. "They will be weak." Back on the chalk, the Kelder of the Wee Free Men watched her fire flicker and thought, "The Witch of Witches is away to the fair lands. Mind how you go, Hagger Hags. You'll be sore missed." She sighed, then called to her husband, the big man of the clan, "Rob, I'm afeard for a big wee hag. She is going to ha' need o' ye. Gae to her, Rob. Take a few of the lads and get ye awa' to her." Jeanie bustled into her chamber to fetch her cauldron. "The edges of our world will nae be as strong," she said to herself. "I need to ken what may be coming our way." And far away, in some place unthinkable, a white horse was being unsaddled by a figure with a scythe with, it must be said, some sorrow. Chapter 3. An Upside-Down World. In a small cottage, in a little hamlet, on the rolling fields of the sheep-haunted chalk, Tiffany Aching had her sleeves rolled up and was sweating just as much as the mother-to-be, a young girl only a few years older than she herself was, who was leaning on her. Tiffany had already helped more than 50 babies into the world, plus lots and lots of lambs, and was generally held to be an expert midwife. Unfortunately, Miss Millie Standish's mother and several other women of varying ages, who had all claimed to be relatives and asserted their right to a place in the very small room, thought they were experts themselves and were generously telling Tiffany what she was doing wrong. Already one or two of them had given her old-fashioned advice, wrong advice, and possibly dangerous advice. But Tiffany kept her calm, tried not to shout at everybody, and concentrated on dealing with the fact that Millie was having twins. She hoped that people couldn't hear her teeth grinding. It was always going to be a difficult birth with two boisterous babies fighting one another to be the first out. But Tiffany was focused on the new lives, and she would not allow Mr. Death a place in this room. Another sweating push from the young mother, and first one and then another baby came yelling into the world to be handed to their grandmother and a neighbour. "Two lads, how wonderful!" said old Mother Standish, with a distinct note of satisfaction. Tiffany wiped her hands, mopped her brow, and continued to look after the mother while the crowd cooed over the new arrivals. and then she noticed something. There was another child in that capacious young woman. Yes, a third baby was arriving, hardly noticed because of the battling brothers ahead of it. Just then, Tiffany looked down and, in a slight greenish-yellow haze, saw a cat, pure white and as aloof as a duchess, staring at her. It was Granny Weatherwax's cat, Yew. Tiffany knew the cat well, having given her to Granny Weatherwax herself only a few years ago. To her horror, one of the older ladies went to shoo Yew away. Tiffany almost screamed. "Ladies, that cat belongs to Granny Weatherwax," she said sharply. "It might not be a good idea to make a very senior witch angry." Suddenly the gaggle backed away. Even here on the chalk, the name of Mistress Weatherwax worked a treat. Her reputation had spread far and wide, further and wider than Granny Weatherwax had been in the habit of travelling herself. The dwarfs over in Stow Plains even had a name for her that translated as "Go Around the Other Side of the Mountain." But Tiffany, sweating again, wondered why Granny's cat was here. Usually, Yew would be hanging around Granny Weatherwax's cottage back in Lanka, not all the way down here on the chalk. Witches saw omens everywhere, of course. So was it some kind of omen? Something to do with what Jeannie had said? Not for the first time, she wondered how it was that cats seemed to be able to be in one place one moment, and then, almost at the same time, reappear somewhere else. She did not know it, but a keen young philosopher in Ephebi had pondered exactly that same conundrum, until he was found one morning, most of him, anyway, surrounded by a number of purring and very well-fed cats. No one had seemed keen to continue his experiments after that. There was a cry of pain from the young mother, and Tiffany gritted her teeth and turned her attention back to the job in hand. Witches do the task that is in front of them, and what was in front of her right at that moment was a struggling young mother and another small head. "One big push, Millie, please. You're having triplets." Millie groaned. "Another one." "A small one," said Tiffany cheerfully, as a girl child arrived, unscathed, quite pretty for a newborn, and small. She handed the baby girl to another relative, and then reality was back again. As Tiffany began clearing up, she noticed, because noticing was the ground state of her being as a witch, that there was a lot more cooing over the two boys than there was for their sister. It was always good to recognise those things and put them away and keep them in mind, so that a little trouble wouldn't, one day, become a larger trouble. The ladies had produced the family groaning chair for Millie, so that she could sit in state to receive the congratulations of the throng. They were also busy congratulating each other, nodding sagely about the advice given, which had clearly been the right advice, since here was the evidence. Two strapping boys. Oh, and a little girl. Bottles were opened, and a child was fetched and told to go across the fields to find Dad, who was working on the barley, with his dad. Mum was beaming, especially since young Millie was very soon to be Mrs. Robinson, because Mum had put her foot down very, very hard about that, and made certain that young Mr. Robinson was definitely going to do his duty by her girl. There hadn't been a problem about this. This was the country, after all, where boy would meet girl, as Millie had met her beau at Hogswatch, and nature would eventually take its course, right up until the moment when the girl's mother would notice the bump. She would then tell her husband, and her husband, over a convivial pint of beer, would have a word with the boy's father, who would then talk to the boy. And usually it worked. Tiffany went over to the old lady holding the little girl. "Can I see her for just a moment, please, just to see if she's, you know, if she's all right?" The rather toothless old crone handed over the little girl with alacrity. After all, she knew that Tiffany, apart from being a midwife, was a witch, and you never knew what a witch might do if you got on the wrong side of one. And when the old granny went to get her share of the drink, Tiffany took the child in her arms and whispered a promise to her in a voice so low that no one could have heard. This little girl would clearly need some luck in her life, and with luck, now, she would get some. She took her back to her mother, who didn't seem very impressed with her. By now, Tiffany noticed, the little boys had names, but the girl didn't. Worried about this, Tiffany said, "What about your girl? Can't she have a name?" The mother looked over. "Name her after yourself. Tiffany is a nice name." Tiffany was flattered, but it didn't take the worry away about baby Tiffany. Those big, strapping boys were going to get most of the milk, she thought. But not if she could do something about it, and so she decided that this particular family was going to be visited almost every week for a time. Then there was nothing for it but to say, "Everything looks fine. You know where to find me. I'll pop in and see you next week. And if you'll excuse me, ladies, I have other people to see." She kept on smiling right up to the time when she came out of the cottage, picked up a broomstick, and a white cat leapt onto the handle of it like a figurehead. The world is changing, Tiffany thought. I can feel it. Suddenly, she caught a flash of the red that showed a feagle or two lurking behind a milk churn. Tiffany had, if only for a few days, once been the kelder of the Knack-Mack Feagle, and this created a bond between them that could never be broken. And they were always there. Always. Watching over her, making sure no harm came to their big wee hag. But there was something different today. This lurking was somehow not like their usual lurking, and... "Oh, Whaley, Whaley," came a voice. This was Daft Woolley, a feagle who had been somewhere else when the brains of a feagle, small enough to begin with, had been handed out. He was shut up, and suddenly, with a woomph, as Rob slapped a hand over his mouth. "Shut your gob, Woolley. This is hag business, you ken," he said, stepping out to stand in front of Tiffany, shuffling his feet and twiddling his rabbit skull helmet in his hands. "It's the big hag," he continued. "Jeannie told me to come and fetch you." All the birds of the day, the bats and the owls of the night, knew Tiffany aching and didn't fly in her way when she was busy, and the stick ploughed on through the air to Lanka. The little kingdom was a long flight from the chalk, and Tiffany found her mind filling up with an invisible grey mist. And in that thought there was nothing but grief. She could feel herself trying to push back time, but even the best witchcraft could not do that. She tried not to think, but it's hard to stop your brain working, no matter how much you try. Tiffany was a witch, and a witch learned to respect her forebodings, even if she hoped that what she feared was not true. It was early evening by the time she settled her broomstick down quietly outside Granny Weatherwax's cottage, where she saw the unmistakable rotund shape of Nanny Og. The older witch had a pint mug in one hand and looked grey. The cat, Ewe, jumped off the broomstick instantly and headed into the cottage. The Knack-Mack Feagles followed, making Ewe scuttle just a little faster, in that way that cats scuttle when they want to look like, oh yes, it was their decision to speed up, and oh no, nothing to do with the little red-haired figures melting into the shadows of the cottage. "Good to see you, Tiff," said Nanny Og. "She's dead, isn't she?" said Tiffany. "Yes," said Nanny. "Esme's gone, in her sleep last night, by the looks of it." "I knew it," said Tiffany. "Her cat came to tell me, and the kelder sent Rob." Nanny Og looked Tiffany in the face and said, "Glad to see you're not crying, my dear. That's for later. You knows how Granny wanted things, no fuss or shouting, and definitely no crying. There's other things as must be done first. Can you help, Tiff? She's upstairs, and you know what them stairs is like." Tiffany looked and saw the long, thin wicker basket that Granny had made waiting by the stairs. It was almost exactly the same size as Granny, minus her hat, of course. Nanny said, "That's Esme for you, that is. Does everything for herself." Granny Weatherwax's cottage was largely built of creaks, and you could play a tune with them if you wanted to. With accompaniment from the harmonious woodwork, Tiffany followed Nanny Og as she huffed and puffed up the cramped little staircase that wound up and round like a snake. Nanny always said that you needed a corkscrew to get through it, until they arrived at the bedroom and the small, sad deathbed. It could, Tiffany thought, had been the bed of a child, and there, laid out properly, was Granny Weatherwax herself, looking as if she was just sleeping. And there, too, on the bed by her mistress, was Ewe, the cat. There was a familiar card on Granny's chest, and a sudden thought struck Tiffany like a gong. "Nanny, you don't suppose Granny could just be borrowing, do you? Do you think that while her body is here, her actual self is elsewhere?" She looked at the white cat curled upon the bed and added hopefully, "In you?" Granny Weatherwax had been an expert at borrowing, moving her mind into that of another creature, using its body, sharing its experiences. And its meals. It's amazing how a night as an owl snacking on voles can really leave a nasty taste in your mouth. It was dangerous witchery, for an inexperienced witch risked losing herself in the mind of the other and never coming back. And of course, whilst away from one's body, people could get the wrong idea. Nanny silently picked up the card from Granny's chest. They looked at it together. I is probably dead. Nanny Ogg turned it over as Tiffany's hand crept towards Granny Weatherwax's wrist, and even now, even when every atom of her witch being told her that Granny was no longer there, the young girl part of her tried to feel for even the slightest beat of life. On the back of the card, however, there was a scrawled message that pretty much put the final strand in the willow basket below. I probably ain't alive, Geetharog. You know what to do and who to tell. All of it goes to Tiffany Aching except the cat, you. She'll go where she wants to. Quietly, Tiffany said, no longer, probably. And then the rest of the note rocketed into her mind. What? What does she mean by all of it goes to Tiffany? Her voice tailed off as she looked at Nanny Ogg aghast. Yes, said Nanny. That's Granny's writing right enough. Good enough for me. You gets the cottage and the surrounding grounds, the herbs and the bees and everything else in the place. Oh, but she always promised me the pink jug and basin set. She looked at Tiffany and went on, I hope she don't mind. Mind, Tiffany thought. Nanny Ogg is asking me if I mind. And then her mind rattled on to two steadings. I mean, I won't need to live with my parents, but it will be a lot of travel. And the main thought hit her like a thunderbolt. How can I possibly tread in the footsteps of Granny Weatherwax? She was unfollowable. Nanny didn't get to be an old senior witch without learning a thing or two along the way. Don't get your knickers in a knot just yet, Tiff, she said briskly. It won't solve anything and will just make you walk odd. There's plenty of time later to talk about all of that. Right now, we need to get on with what must be done. Tiffany and Nanny had dealt with death many times. Out in the Ramtops, witches did the things that had to be done to make the departed presentable for the next world. The slightly messy things that weren't talked about, and other little things like opening a window for the soul to get out. Granny Weatherwax had, in fact, already opened the window, though her soul, Tiffany thought, could probably get out of anywhere and go anywhere she chose. Nanny Ogg held up the two pennies from the bedside table and said, She left them ready for us, just like Esme, thoughtful to the end, like. Shall we begin? Unfortunately, Nanny had brought Granny Weatherwax's bottle of triple-distilled peach brandy, for medicinal use only, from the scullery. She said it would help her as she went through the rites for their sister in the craft. And although they dealt with Granny Weatherwax as if she were a precious gem, Nanny Ogg's drinking was not helping. She looks good, don't she? Said Nanny, after the nasty bits. And thank goodness Granny still had all her own teeth, were over and done with. It's a shame. Always thought as I'd be the first to go, what with my drinking and such like, especially the such like. I've done a lot of that. In fact, Nanny Ogg had done a great deal of everything, and was commonly held to be so broad-minded that you could pull her mind out through her ears and tie a hat on with it. Is there going to be a funeral? Asked Tiffany. Well, you know Esme. She wasn't one for that kind of thing. Never one to push herself forward. She hadn't ever needed to. Granny Weatherwax was like the prow of a ship. Seas parted when she turned up. And we witches don't much like funerals. Granny called them fuss. Tiffany thought of the only other witch's funeral she had been to, the late Miss Treason, for whom she had worked, had wanted a lot of fuss. She hadn't wanted to miss the event herself either, so she had sent out invitations in advance. It had been memorable. As they put Granny Weatherwax to bed, as Granny had called it, Nanny said, Queen Magrat has to be told. She's away in Genua at the moment with the King, but I dare say as she'll be along as soon as possible, what with all these railways and what not. Anyone else as needs to know will probably know already, you mark my words. But first thing tomorrow, before they get here, we'll bury Esme the way she wanted, quiet-like and no fuss, in that wickerwork basket downstairs. Very cheap wickerwork baskets are and quick to make, Esme always said. And you know Esme, she's such a frugal person. Nothing goes to waste. Tiffany spent the night on the truckle bed, a tiny thing which was usually pushed away when it wasn't needed. Nanny Ogg had settled for the rocking chair downstairs, which squeaked and complained every time she rocked back. But Tiffany didn't sleep. There were a series of half-sleeps as the light of the moon filtered into the room, and every time she looked up, there was you, the cat, asleep at the foot of Granny's bed, curled up like a little white moon herself. Tiffany had watched the dead before many times, of course. It was the custom for a departing soul to have company the night before any funeral or burial, as if to make a point to anything that might be lurking. This person mattered. There is someone here to make sure nothing evil creeps in at this time of danger. The night-time creaking of woodwork filled the room now, and Tiffany, fully awake, listened as Granny Weatherwax began making sounds of her own as her body settled down. "I've done this often," she told herself. "It's what we witches do. We don't talk about it, but we do it. We watch the dead to see that no harm comes to them out of the darkness. Although, as Nanny said, maybe it's the living you have to watch, for despite what most people thought, the dead don't hurt anybody." "What do I do now?" she thought in the small hours of the night. "What's going to happen tomorrow? The world is upside down. I can't replace Granny, never in 100 years. And then she thought, what did young Esmeralda say when Nanny Gripes told her that her steading was the whole world? She twisted and turned, then opened her eyes and looked up suddenly to see an owl gazing in at her from the window sill, its huge eyes hanging in the darkness like a lantern to another world. Another omen. Granny had liked owls. Now her second thoughts were at work, thinking about what she was thinking. You can't say you're not good enough. No witch would ever say that, they told her. I mean, you know you're pretty good, yes. The senior witches know that you once threw the queen of the fairies from our world, and they saw you go through the gate with the hiver. They all saw you return, too. But is that enough? Her first thoughts butted in. After we have done what we need to do, I could just put on my number 2 drawers and go home on my broomstick. I have to go anyway, even if I take on the steading. I have to tell my parents. I'm going to need help on the chalk. It's going to be a nightmare if I have to be in 2 places at once. I'm not like a cat. And as she thought that, she looked down, and there was you, looking at her. But not just looking. A penetrating stare of the kind that only cats can achieve. And it seemed to Tiffany that this meant, get on with your job. There is a lot of work to be doing. Don't think of yourself. Think for all. Then tiredness was finally her friend, and Tiffany Aching had a few hours' sleep. The clacks rattled as the news of Granny Weatherwax went down the lines in the morning, and people who got the message faced it in their various ways. In the study of her manor house, Mrs. Earwig, pronounced Arwidge, got the news while she was writing her next book on flower magic. And there was a sudden sense of wrongness, of the world going askew. She put the right expression of grief on her face and went to tell her husband, an elderly wizard, trying to keep her joy hidden as she realised what this could mean. She, Mrs. Earwig, was going to be one of the most senior witches in Lanka. Perhaps she could get her latest girl into that old cottage in the woods. Her sharp face went even sharper as she thought how magical she could make it look with the help of a few curse nets, charms, runic symbols, silver stars, black velvet drapes, and, oh yes, the essential crystal ball. She called to her latest young trainee to fetch her cape and broomstick and pulled on her very best pair of black lacy gloves, the ones with the silver symbols stitched over each fingertip. She would need to make an entrance. In Boffo's Novelty and Joke Emporium 4, 10th Egg Street, Ankh-Morpork, Everything for the Hag in a Hurry, Mrs. Proust said, "What a shame! But the old girl had a good innings." Witches don't have leaders, of course, but everyone knew that Granny Weatherwax had been the best leader they didn't have. So now someone else would need to step forward to generally steer the witches, and to keep an eye, too, on anyone prone to a bit of cackling. Mrs. Proust put down an imitation cackle she had taken from her Compare the Cackle display and looked towards her son Derek and said, "There's going to be an argument now, or my name's not Eunice Proust. But it will surely be young Tiffany Aching who gets that steading. We all saw what she can do, my word we did." And in her mind, she said, "Go to it, Tiffany, before somebody else does." In the palace, Drumknot the clerk hurried with the Ankh-Morpork Times to the oblong office where Lord Vetinari, the patrician of the city, had been waiting for his daily crossword to arrive. but Vetinari already knew the news that mattered.
There will be some trouble. Mark my words, I expect squabbling on the distaff side.
He sighed.
Any ideas, Drumnod? Who will rise to the top of the brew, do you think?
He tapped the top of his ebony cane as he considered his own question.
Well, my lord, said Drumnod, the rumour on the clacks is that it's likely to be Tiffany Aching, quite young.
Quite young, yes.
And any good? Asked Vetinari.
I believe so, sir.
What about this woman called Mrs. Earwig?
Drumnod made a face.
All show, my lord. Doesn't get her hands dirty. Lot of jewellery, black lace, you know the type. Well connected, but that's about all I can say.
Ah, yes, now you tell me. I've seen her.
Pushy and full of herself. She's the kind who goes to soirees.
So do you, my lord.
Yes, but I am the tyrant, so it's the job I have to do, alas. Now this Aching young lady, what else do we know about her? Wasn't there some bother the last time she was in the city?
My lord, the Knack Macfeagles are very fond of her, and she of them. They consider themselves an honour guard to her on occasions.
Drumnod.
Yes, my lord?
I'm going to use a word I've not used before.
Crivens. We don't want Feagles around here again. We can't afford it.
Unlikely, my lord. Mistress Aching has them in hand, and she's unlikely to want to repeat the events of her last visit, which, after all, had no long-lasting damage.
Didn't the king's head become the king's neck?
The only known instance of the Feagles rebuilding a pub they had drunk dry and demolished. The rebuilt version, however, turned out back to front, complete with a big ripe boil on the neck in question.
Yes, indeed, my lord, but it has in fact proved a welcome change to many, most of all to the publican, who is still getting wealthy because of the tourists. It's in the guidebooks.
If she has the Knack Macfeagles on her side, she is a force to be reckoned with, Vetinari mused. The young lady is also known to be thoughtful, helpful, and clever, without being insufferable.
I wish I could say the same of Mrs. Earwig.
Hmm, said Vetinari. We should keep a careful eye on her.
Mustrum Ridcully, Arch-Chancellor of Unseen University, stared at his bedroom wall and cried again, and once he'd pulled himself together, he sent for Ponder Stibbons, his right-hand wizard.
"The clacks confirms what Hex told you, Mr. Stibbons," he said sadly. "The witch, Esme Weatherwax of Lanker, known to many as Granny Weatherwax, has died."
The Arch-Chancellor looked slightly embarrassed. There was a bundle of letters on his lap, which he was turning over and over.
"There was a bond, you see, when we were both young. But she wanted to be the best of all witches, and I hoped one day to be Arch-Chancellor. Alas for us, our dreams came true."
Thus proving that dreams that come true are not always the right dreams. Does wearing a glass slipper lead to a comfortable life? If everything you touch turns into marshmallows, won't that make things a bit sticky?
Oh, dear, sir, would you like me to arrange your schedule so that you can attend the funeral? There will be a funeral, I assume.
Mr. Stibbons, schedules be damned. I am leaving now, right now.
With respect, Arch-Chancellor, I must tell you, sir, that you promised to go to a meeting with the Guild of Accountants and Usurers.
Those penny pinchers! Tell them that I've got an urgent matter of international affairs to deal with.
Ponder hesitated.
That is not strictly true, is it, Arch-Chancellor?
Ridcully riposted with,
Oh, yes, it is!
Rules were for other people, not for him. Nor, he thought with a pang, had they been for Esme Weatherwax.
How long have you been working for the university, young man?
He boomed at Stibbons.
Dissembling is our stock in trade. Now I'm going to get on my broomstick, Mr. Stibbons, and I will leave the place in your very capable hands.
And in that other world, that parasite with its evil little hooks in the gateways of stone, an elf was hatching his plans, plotting to seize Fairyland from the control of a queen who had never fully recovered her powers after her humiliating defeat at the hands of a young girl named Tiffany Aching, plotting to pounce, to spring through a gateway that, for a time at least, would be gossamer thin. For a powerful hag no longer stood in their way, and those in that world would be vulnerable. The Lord Peasblossom's eyes gleamed, and his mind filled with glorious images of victims, of the pleasures of cruelty, the splendours of a land where the elves could toy once more with new playthings. When the moment was right. Chapter 4. A Farewell and a Welcome. Getting Granny Weatherwax's corpse down the winding stair with its tiny little steps and the tiny little cottage the following morning was not helped by the big jug of cider which Nanny Ogg was emptying speedily, but nevertheless they got it done without a bump. They laid Granny's body carefully in the wicker casket, and Tiffany went out to the barn to fetch the wheelbarrow and shovels while Nanny Ogg caught her breath. Then, together, they gently lifted the basket into the wheelbarrow and placed the shovels on either side of her. Tiffany picked up the handles of the barrow. "You stay here now, Rob," she said to the Feagle, as he and his little band appeared from their varied hiding places and lined up behind her. "This is a hag thing, you ken. You cannot help me." Rob Anybody shuffled his feet. "But ye are old hag, and ye ken the genie," he began. "Rob Anybody," Tiffany's steely gaze pinned him to the ground, "you remember the chief hag, Granny Weatherwax? Do you want her shade to come back and tell you what to do for ever and ever?" There was a group moan, and Daft Woolly backed away, whimpering. "Then understand this. This is something we hags must do by ourselves." She turned to Nanny Ogg, resolute. "Where are we going, Nanny?"
"Esme marked a spot in the woods, Tiff, where she wanted to be planted," Nanny replied. "Follow me, I know where it is."
Granny Weatherwax's garden was cheek by jowl with the woodland beyond, but the journey felt a long way to Tiffany before they arrived at the heart of the forest, where a stick was pushed into the ground, a red ribbon tied to the top of it. Nanny passed Tiffany a shovel, and the two of them started digging in the cool early morning air. It was hard work, but Granny had chosen her place well, and the soil was soft and friable. The hole finally dug, mostly, it has to be said, by Tiffany. Nanny Ogg, sweating cobs, according to her, rested on the handle of her shovel and took a swig from her flagon as Tiffany brought the wheelbarrow over. They laid the wicker basket gently in the hole and then stood back for a moment. Without a word being said, together, solemnly, they bowed to Granny's grave. Then they picked up the shovels again and started to fill it back in. Kathunk, kathunk. The earth built up over the wicker until all that could be seen was soil, and Tiffany watched it flow in until the last crumb had stopped moving. As they smoothed the fresh mound of earth, Nanny told Tiffany that Granny had said she wanted no urns, no shrines, and definitely no gravestone. "Surely there should be a stone," said Tiffany. "You know how badgers and mice and other creatures can lift the earth. Even though we know the bones are not her, I, for one, would want to be sure that nothing is dug up until..." She hesitated. "The ends of time," said Nanny. "Look, Tiff, Esme told me to say, if you wants to see Esmeralda Weatherwax, then just you look around. She is here. Us witches don't mourn for very long. We are satisfied with happy memories. They're there to be cherished." The memory of Granny aching suddenly shone in Tiffany's mind. Her own granny had been no witch, though Weatherwax had been very interested in hearing about her. But when Granny aching had died, her shepherding hut had been burned, and her bones had gone down into the hills, 6 feet deep in the chalk. Then the turf had been put back with a spot marked only by the iron wheels of the hut. But it was a sacred spot now, a place for memories, and not only for Tiffany. No shepherd ever passed without a glance at the skies and a thought for Granny Aching, who had tramped those hills night after night, her light zigzagging in the darkness. Her nod of approval had meant the world on the chalk. This spot in the woods, Tiffany realised, would be the same. Blessed. It had been a nice day for it, she thought, if there ever was such a thing as a good day to die. A good day to be buried. And now the birds were singing overhead, and there was a soft rustling in the undergrowth, and all the sounds of the forest which showed that life was still being lived blended with the souls of the dead in a woodland requiem. The whole forest now sang for Granny Weatherwax. Tiffany saw a fox sidle up, bow, and then run away because a wild boar had arrived with its family of piglets. Then there was a badger, paying no heed to those who had come earlier, and it remained, and Tiffany was astounded when creature after creature settled down near the grave and sat there as if they were domestic pets. Where is Granny now? Tiffany wondered. Could a part of her still be here? She jumped as something touched her on the shoulder, but it was just a leaf. Then deep inside, She knew the answer to her question. Where is Granny Weatherwax? It was, she is here, and everywhere. To Tiffany's surprise, Nanny Ogg was weeping gently. Nanny took another swig from her flagon and wiped her eyes.
Crying helps sometimes, she said. No shame in tears for them as you've loved. Sometimes I remember one of my husbands and shed a tear or two. The memories are there to be treasured, and it's no good to get morbid-like about it.
How many husbands have you actually had, Nanny? Asked Tiffany. And Nanny appeared to be counting.
Three of my own, and let's just say I've run out of fingers on the rest, as it were.
But she was smiling now, perhaps remembering a very treasured husband. And then, bouncing back from the past, she was suddenly her normal cheerful self again.
Come on, Tiff, she said. Let's go back to your cottage. Like I always says, a decent wake don't happen by itself.
As they made their way back to the cottage, Tiffany asked Nanny the question which had been burning in her mind. What do you think will happen next?
Nanny looked at Tiffany. What do you mean?
Well, Granny wasn't exactly the head witch, except that most people thought she was.
There ain't no such thing as a head witch, Tiff, you know that.
Yes, but if Granny's not here any more, do you become the not head witch?
Me? Nanny Ogg laughed. Oh, no, dear. I've had a very good life, me. Lots of children, lots of men, lots of fun, and yes, as witches go, I'm pretty good. But I never thought of stepping into Esme's shoes, ever.
Well, who is, then? Someone's got to.
Nanny Ogg scowled and said, Granny never said as she was better than others. She just got on with it and showed 'em, and people worked it out for themselves. You mark my words. The senior witches will get together soon enough to talk about this, but I know who Granny would choose, and it's as I would too.
She stopped and looked serious for a moment.
It's you, Tiff. Esme's left you her cottage. But more than that, you must step into the shoes of Granny Weatherwax, or else someone less qualified will try and do it.
But I can't. And witches don't have leaders. You've just said that, Nanny.
Yes, said Nanny. And you must be the best damn leader that we don't have. Don't look at me sideways like that, Tiffany Aching. Just think about it. You didn't try to earn it, but earn it you has. And if you don't believe me, believe Granny Weatherwax. She told me that you was the only witch who could seriously take her place. She said that on the night after you run with that air.
She never said anything to me, said Tiffany, feeling suddenly very young.
Well, she wouldn't say nothing, of course she wouldn't, said Nanny. That's not Esme's way, you know that. She would have given a grunt, and maybe said, well done, girl. She just liked people to know their own strengths, and your strengths are formidable.
But, Nanny, you're older, more experienced than me. You know lots more,
and some of it I wants to forget, said Nanny.
I'm far too young, Tiffany wailed. If I wasn't a witch, I'd still just be thinking of boyfriends.
Nanny Ogg almost jumped on her. You're not too young, she said. Yours ain't what's important here. Granny Weatherwax said to me as you is the one who's to deal with the future. And being young means you've got a lot of future. She sniffed. Lot more than me, that's for sure.
But that's not how it works, Tiffany said. It ought to be a senior witch. It has to be.
But her second thoughts then leapt up in her head, challenging her.
Why? Why not to do things differently? Why should we do things how they have always been done before?
And something inside her suddenly thrilled to the challenge.
Huh, Nanny retorted. You dance with the air to save the lives of your friends, my girl. Do you remember being so angry that you picked up a lump of flint and let it dribble between your fingers as if it was water? All the senior witches were there, and they took off their hats to you. You!
Hats!
She stomped off towards the cottage with just one parting shot. And remember, you chose you. That cat there, she went to you when Esme up and left.
And there the white cat was, sitting on the stump of an old birch, preening herself. And Tiffany wondered. Oh, yes, she wondered.
Just as they got back to the cottage, a dishevelled but very large wizard was trying to land his broomstick by the goat shed.
"It is good of you to come, Mushroom," Nanny Ogg shouted across the garden, as the gentleman smoothed down his robes, trod carefully past the herbs, and doffed his hat to them.
Tiffany noticed with glee that he had it tied onto his head with string.
"Tiff, this is Mushroom Ridcully, Arch-Chancellor of Unseen University."
Tiffany had only met one or two wizards, and they had mostly been of the type that relied on the robes, pointy hat and staff to make their point, hoping that they never had to actually do anything magical. On the face of it, Ridcully looked exactly the same. Beard, big staff with a knob on the top,
pointy hat. Wait. A pointy hat with a crossbow tucked into the hatband. The witch side of her stepped back and watched carefully. But Ridcully was not interested in her at all. To her astonishment, the Arch-Chancellor actually appeared to be crying.
"Is it true, then, Nanny? Has she really gone?"
Nanny gave him a handkerchief, and as he blew noisily into it, she whispered to Tiffany, "He and Esme were, well, you know, good friends when they were younger." She winked. The Arch-Chancellor seemed to be overcome. Nanny handed him a flagon. "My famous remedy, Your Worship. Best to drink it down in one great gulp. Works a right treat for melancholy, it does. Whenever I'm a bit unsure of myself, I drinks a lot of it. Medicinal use only, of course." The Arch-Chancellor took the flagon, swigged down a couple of gulps in one go, and then flourished it at Nanny.
"Here's to Esmeralda Weatherwax and lost futures," he said in a voice choked with sorrow. "May we all go round again."
He removed his hat, unscrewed the pointy bit, and brought out a small bottle of brandy and a cup.
"For you, Mrs. Ogg," he boomed. "And now, may I see her, please?"
"We have laid her down already, where she wanted to rest," said Nanny. "You know how it is. She didn't want no fuss." She looked at him and continued, "I'm very sorry about that, Mustrum, but we'll take you to the spot where she is now. Tiffany, why don't you lead the way?" And thus, the most important wizard in the world respectfully followed Tiffany and Nanny Ogg through the woods to the last resting place of the most important witch in the world. The trees surrounding the little clearing were full of birds singing their souls out. Nanny and Tiffany held back to allow the wizard a private moment by the grave. He sighed.
"Thank you, Mistress Ogg, Mistress Aching."
Then the Arch-Chancellor turned to Tiffany and looked at her properly.
"For the sake of Esmeralda Weatherwax, my dear, if you ever need a friend, you can call on me. Being the most important wizard in the world must mean something."
He paused.
"I have heard of you," he said, and at her gasp he added, "No, don't be surprised. You must know that we wizards keep an eye on what you witches do. We know when magic is disturbed, when something happens. So I heard about the flint. Was it true?"
His voice was brusque now, a man who did not do small talk, only big talk, and in a big voice, too. "Yes," said Tiffany, "all of it."
"My word," said Ridcully. "And now I feel certain that your future is going to be, let us say, very speckled. I can see the signs in you, Mistress Tiffany Aching, and I know many people of power, people who have so much power that they don't have to wield it. You are hardly into your prime, yet I see this in you. And so I live in wonder about what you might do next."
His face now fell, and he continued,
"Would you ladies now leave me alone with my feelings? I'm sure I can find my way back to the cottage."
Later on, the Arch-Chancellor walked back to his broomstick, and Tiffany and Nanny Ogg watched him disappear in the general direction of Ankh Morpork. The broomstick itself was wobbling about as he rose over the woods in a final salute. Nanny smiled.
"He is a wizard. He can be sober when he likes, and if he ain't, well, he can fly a broomstick well enough, with a brandy or two inside him. After all, there's not much to bump into up there."
As the morning progressed, more and more people were coming to pay their respects at the little cottage. The news had spread, and it seemed like everybody wanted to leave a gift for Granny Weatherwax, for the witch who had always been there for them, even if they hadn't actually liked her. Esme Weatherwax hadn't done nice. She'd done what was needed. She'd been there for them when they called at the cottage. She'd come out at whatever time of day or night when asked, and sometimes when not, which hadn't always been comfortable. And somehow she had made them feel safer. They brought hams and cheeses, milk and pickles, jams and beer, bread and fruit. It also seemed that broomsticks were coming through the trees from everywhere, and there was nothing a witch appreciated more than a bit of free food. Tiffany caught one elderly witch trying to stuff an entire chicken up her knickers. And as the witches turned up, the villagers began to melt away. It didn't do to be around that many witches. Why risk it? Nobody wanted to be turned into a frog. After all, who would bring in the harvest then? They started to make their excuses and sidle off, with those who had partaken of Nanny Ogg's famous cocktails sidling in a rather wobbly fashion. None of the witches had been invited, but it seemed to Tiffany they had been drawn there, just like the Arch-Chancellor. Even Mrs. Earwig turned up. She came in a carriage and pair, complete with black plumes, and her arms jingled with bangles and charms, as if the percussion section of an orchestra had suddenly fallen off a cliff, while her hat was festooned in silver stars.
Her husband was dragged along beside her. Tiffany felt sorry for the man.
"Hail, sisters, and may the runes protect us on this momentous occasion," Mrs. Earwig pronounced, just loud enough to be heard by the remaining villagers. She did like to advertise her witchiness. She gave Tiffany a long stare, which infuriated Nanny Ogg.
Nanny made the briefest possible bow, then turned and said,
"Look, Tiffany, there is Agnes Knit. Watch her, Agnes!"
Agnes, a witch with a waistline that suggested she had a similar attitude to eating as the Feagles' Kelder, was out of breath, saying,
"I've been touring in Stackpole's Much Ado About Everybody. I was in Quirm when I heard, and I came as fast as I could."
Tiffany hadn't met Agnes before, but from one look at her sensible face and good-natured smile, she thought she would probably get along with her very well indeed. Then she was overcome with delight as a broomstick wobbled down to the land, and she heard the familiar of her friend Petulia.
"Tiffany, I heard you were here. Do you want some help with making any sandwiches?" Petulia offered, waving a big side of bacon as she landed.
Petulia was married to a pig farmer and was acknowledged to be Lanka's best pig borer. Pig boring saved a lot of nasty squealing. A pig borer, like Petulia, would talk to the pigs until they simply died of boredom. She was also one of Tiffany's very best friends.
"Dimity is here too, and, Lucy Warbeck," Petulia continued.
The ums always got worse when she was in the company of other witches. Amazingly, she never used the word when pig boring, which had to say something about Petulia and pigs. Tiffany and Nanny Ogg's grandsons had put up some makeshift tables. After all, everybody knows what a funeral is really for, and most people like eating and drinking, whatever the occasion. There was music, and over it all, Agnes's heavenly voice. She sang the Columbine Lament, and as its soft tune wafted over the roof and into the forest beyond, Nanny said to Tiffany, "That voice could make the trees cry." And there was dancing, no doubt helped along by Nanny Ogg's bruise. Nanny Ogg could get any party singing and dancing. It was a gift, Tiffany thought. Nanny could jolly up a graveyard if she put her mind to it.
"No long faces for Granny Weatherwax, please," Nanny proclaimed. "She's had a good death at home, just as anyone might wish for. Witches know that people die, and if they manages to die after a long time, leaving the world better than they went and found it, well then, that's surely a reason to be happy. All the rest of it is just tidying up. Now, let's dance. Dancing makes the world go round, and it goes round even faster with a drop of my home liquor inside you."
Up in the roof of Granny's cottage, swinging from the boughs of the little tree that grew out of the thatch, the Knack-Mack Feagles, Rob Anybody, Daft Woody, Big Yan, and the Gonagall, Awfully Wee Billy Big Chin, were in agreement with the latter part of that statement, although they were keeping the dancing for later mind. They stayed mostly out of sight, spotted only by one or two of the more observant witches, but now they came down to the scullery where Tiffany was starting on what the elderly, more senior witches always expected the younger girls to do, clearing up. The senior witches were beginning to gather together outside. It was time to discuss the appointment of a new incumbent to Granny Weatherwax's steading, and Tiffany wanted to keep out of the way while she thought about what she might say. As the haunting tones of Awfully Wee Billy Big Chin's mousepipes played a soft lament for the soul of the Hag of Hags, the other Feagles began raiding the tables for any leftovers the witches had missed.
"Alas, poor Granny, I knew her well," sighed Big Yan,
swigging from a bottle of Nanny's homemade hooch.
"No, you didn't," Tiffany snapped. "Only Granny Weatherwax really knew Granny Weatherwax."
The day was still too raw for her, and the witches outside were making her nervous.
"Ha, ha," laughed Daft Woolly. "It weren't me this time, Rob, nay me, what put my foot in it. I says the hag were upset, Rob, didn't he, I?"
"I'll put my boot into your face if you don't shut up," Big Yan growled.
They'd had the drinking and eating, postponed the dancing, but wasn't it time for a wee fight? He clenched his fists, but then had to suddenly retreat as Tiffany's friends came into the scullery.
"I think it's going to be you, Tiffany," Dimity hissed, poking her in the back. "Nanny Ogg just stood up and asked for you. You'd better get out there."
"Go on, Tiff," Petulia urged. "Everyone knows what Granny Weatherwax thought of you."
And so, pushed and pulled by her friends, Tiffany left the scullery, but she hovered by the back door of the cottage, unwilling to take that final step, to make a claim. This was Granny's cottage, she still felt, even though the not-granniness was beginning to feel like a huge hole in the air around her. Tiffany looked down at her feet. Hugh was twining around her legs, arching her back and rubbing her hard little head against Tiffany's boot. Outside, some of the witches were looking at Nanny Ogg, who was saying,
"Yes, ladies, Esme did tell us who her successor was to be."
She turned and gestured to Tiffany to come nearer.
"I wish I'd been there," she added.
when Esme Weatherwax was made witch by Nanny Gripes? You think who makes you a witch is the kind of witch you're going to become, but we all have to find our own way, as we go along, like? Granny Weatherwax was always her own true witch self, never just another Nanny Gripes. And though I think we could all talk for ourselves, people like the Arch-Chancellor and Lord Veterinari, and indeed someone like the Low Queen of the Dwarfs, well, they want to know sometimes that they can talk to somebody who can speak, officially like, for all witches. And I'm pretty certain they looked on Esme as being that voice of witchcraft. So we needs to listen to her voice too. And she told me who her successor should be. Yes, and wrote it on this here card. Nanny brandished in the air the card Granny Weatherwax had left on her bedside chest. Someone had clearly raised the idea of Mrs. Earwig taking over the steading. Or Mrs. Earwig had raised the prospect of her latest trainee getting the cottage. Nanny glared at her, and there was no trace of the jolly witch in her now, oh no. "Lettice Earwig just makes shiny things for her would-be witches," she stated. She ignored the humph from Mrs. Earwig as she continued. "But Tiffany Aching, yes, sisters, Tiffany Aching, we've all seen what she can do. It's not about shiny charms, not about books. It's about being a witch to the bone in the darkness and dealing with the lamentation and the tears. It's about being real. Esme Weatherwax knew this with every bone in her body. And so does Tiffany Aching, and this steading is hers." Tiffany gasped as the other witches turned to look at her, and as the muttering began, she stepped forward hesitantly. Then Yu meowed, the cry cutting through the murmuring in the crowd, and the white cat came again to Tiffany's side. Suddenly there was a humming in the air, and the bees were there too. They flowed out of Granny Weatherwax's hive, circling Tiffany like a halo, crowning her, and Swarm and Girl stood on the threshold of the cottage, and Tiffany reached out her arms, and the bees settled along them and welcomed her home. And after that, on that terrible day when a farewell was said to the Witch of Witches, there was no more argument, as Tiffany Aching became in all eyes the witch to follow.